This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 403. Just like Disney World, we try to banish the darkness from the universe. Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda!
Greetings and salutations.
Oh, how are you?
I'm okay.
Did you have a good week?
Yeah.
Oh, you sound so sad.
No, I'm just tired.
Oh, don't have a sad. Don't have a tired. Has a energy! That's why you need caffeine. I'm drinking caffeine right now because I can't drink anything else. That's right. This is a sober podcast for Ninja Sister.
Wow, that's very surprising.
That's a big deal. Just saying. No alcohol was harmed in the taping of this podcast. Not that we use tape. I'm just saying. So, brand new week. Lots of game stuff to talk about. Lots of nerdy stuff to talk about. I'm going to quickly say some things about Apple. Why? Because mostly... In the spirit of disclosure and all that good stuff, I do own Apple stock, so I've got that out there, but I am not gonna lie, I'm an Apple fangirl to the core. See what I did there? I work for Apple for a bunch of years, love what they did, so of course I geeked out like the rest of, known humanity upon the interwebs this week when Apple had their announcement where they announced the new phones as well as the Apple Watch. And I want to say a couple of things. First and foremost, I think anybody who follows me on social knows that I said as soon as Apple comes out with a bigger iPhone, I was going to buy it. And of course, Apple announced the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus. The 6 Plus has a 5.5-inch screen. It has the NFC capability, which will let you use Apple Pay and do the completely, hopefully, secure. Not really completely, but we'll get to that. Secure payments in the cloud, via the cloud. Nobody has your information. So it should be more difficult to get as far as cyber stealing of identity theft and whatnots, which was kind of cool. But most importantly for me, the bigger screen. And that's really like the only thing that I've ever had Android envy about is really the larger screen. Tall doesn't do it for me, fellas. I really kind of like the width. Yeah, I'm all about the girth. I said it. Mostly because I tend to like using the full screen in apps. I don't play a lot of games on my phone. I do play some on my iPad, especially when I travel. But for my phone, I'm primarily living in social apps like Facebook, and I use Tweetbot for Twitter. And so having a larger screen would allow me to see more content and interact a little bit better with controls and apps than the current iPhone 5 that I have. I also do some, really surprisingly, article work on my mobile device, especially if I'm at a venue that says that they have Wi-Fi, but I actually can't connect to the Wi-Fi because they only think about PCs and not Mac users, and they set all kinds of stupid things in their SSIDs that make it almost impossible for a Mac to connect. Surprise, surprise. You know who you are. Anyway, so I do sometimes from my phone, especially if my iPad is dying, write articles for EGM Now for our page via mobile. Especially live tweeting when we do live events, typically is either done from an iPad or from an iPhone, more so than not from an iPhone because, again, not able to connect to Wi-Fi. So a larger screen is really something that I need It does prohibit me from putting the phone in my pocket, which is like my diehard place to put it. But the only time I've ever damaged any iPhone I've had has been because of being in a pocket. So I kind of like having a device that'd be a little bit bigger so that I couldn't put it in my pocket. I would actually have to carry it like in a holster outside of my pocket, which would train me to be better to my tech, which I like. So I was already sold on an iPhone 6 Plus before Apple actually announced it. Again, because the thing that I wanted was a larger screen for multitasking. And I knew with the new iOS that they would bring it. And then, surprise, they did. And the internet was like, oh, look, it's the same shit, and it's bigger. And some of the Android guys were like, hey, welcome to, like, 3 years ago, because we've had a bigger screen forever. And we've been able to have, you know, multitasking going on in an app forever. And I was like, that's great. But now my shit will work with my shit because I'm an Apple fangirl. So I have everything. My music and my movies are all in iTunes, and I wanted an app that would, a device that will work with all of that stuff. I use the cloud tremendously, and I use the cloud backup. So your Android can't talk to my backup. So fuck you. That really doesn't make any sense for me. So I'm very happy about the new 6 Plus. I'm pissed that I got boned out of getting one on the first day, but hey, that's what happens when AT&T and Apple can't get their shit together. But I'll eventually get one, and it's all good, and I'm looking forward to it. And I will get a watch because I love wearables. I have a Nike Fuel Band that I use, and mostly to track my steps because I'm trying to get more active these days. And I really wish that it did other things, and not so much necessarily tell time. I actually got a band to put my original Shuffle in to turn it kind of sort of into a watch. But I really wanted a wearable that would notify me when I was getting calls, because I'm in meetings a lot of times during the day, and I don't bring my personal phone with me into those meetings because I don't want to be that douchebag in a meeting with two phones on the table. Like, I'm oh so important, although I kind of am. But I really wanted a wearable that would give me a notification when I was getting a call or a text message through to my wrist so I could kind of nonchalantly check and see if it was something important that I needed to excuse myself from the meeting and go manage. Again, not being that douchebag. So if the Apple device came out and it did that, plus it was a watch, plus it let me get to my cloud stuff, meaning music and my messages via MMS and SMS, I was going to be sold on that device too. Then they came out and said, well, no, actually, we've got a dev kit for it. So pretty much, for the most part, all the apps that are on the App Store more than likely can be converted and you can put them on your watch. Well, that opens up a whole lot of cans of worms. Plus, you'll be able to Apple Pay through the watch. Again, I think it's kind of a no-brainer. So I'm very happy with the Apple announcement. I want to play Vainglory real bad. That thing will baller. And I love it when Apple demos a game in real time and the sucker looks fantastic. And, you know, 60 frames a second on a smartphone doesn't suck when it comes to games. So that was pretty impressive. All in all, Apple's going to get my money. Surprise, surprise. Again, I just don't know when they'll fucking ship things to me. But I'm looking forward to it. So that was like a good way to start my nerdy day. And then I finished that nerdy day playing Destiny. Or rather, I guess, in all honesty, I started it with Destiny because I did, in fact, get up at 3 o'clock in the morning on the 9th to start playing it. Because I actually could play it on the East Coast because my dumbass interpreted it being available at midnight as being midnight Eastern and not Pacific. And then I was like, why can't I play my Destiny? Why is it telling me I have 3 more hours to wait? And my husband went, well, because I think it's Pacific time. I was like, nuh-uh, because they would oh, fuck me, it is. Let me go back to sleep and I'll wake up in 3 hours. So I did that, and I played till I got dizzy, and I turned it off because I took the day off. And I'm going to talk a little bit more, and let me not lie, I'm going to talk a lot bit more about Destiny. I've actually played it with Panda. True to her word, she played with me, guys.
I will continue to play with you, too. So aww, it's not like a one-time thing.
I love the enthusiasm there. Yep.
Because you're like, what, 4 times my level now?
Probably.
Like, this is the first game I think you've out-leveled me
in a short amount of time. To be fair, I did take 2 days off of work.
True.
Okay, so I have a 10-hour head start on you.
Yeah, essentially.
So, that, in all honesty, I've played 10 more hours. Well, now more than 10 hours. I think it's like 12 hours more than you. But
I'm level 8 now.
I'm level 20.
Yeah.
I'm cruising to 21. And by that, I mean grinding. There's a lot of grinding in Destiny.
I'm not too surprised about that.
No, but it's good grinding. So there's a couple of people out there that have started talking and doing their reviews about Destiny, and they're like, eh, meh, it's a meh game. And I think that if you're expecting it to be, like, a Halo killer, then Destiny probably would be meh to you. It's not a Halo killer. But what I will say is, I've played Halo, I've played Quake, and I've played Destiny. Out of all of those, I prefer Destiny. I like the 3-on-3 and 6-on-6 gameplay, even though I suck at the Crucible, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. I love the pop-in, pop-out. I really like the cooperative play that you have up into a point. So whenever you jump onto a planet, there's a section of any planet drive where you can play with any other members that are on the screen. So you all can be attacking enemies and whatnot together. And it's just when you get to the mission critical piece that unless they're part of your fire team, basically your party, your sortie, they disappear. And I like that because if I'm going through and I'm just grinding to try and kill enemies, I like that all of a sudden somebody will come out of no place and just start assisting me. And it's almost like Journey. I don't have my mic on. We're not communicating, but we start kind of running the same path together to support each other for a while. Or people will jump up and down to get my attention because they want me to follow them because they found a chest that they want to point out to me, which is really cool. And I like that. And you don't get that in Halo. And you don't get, I've never had that happen in a Halo game, and I've never had that happen in a Quake game. But it happens all the time for me in Destiny, and it's actually been a really good experience. I've played with a couple people who aren't my friends, and I know I've said before on games that, like, for these types of games, I typically only play with people that I know, because usually when I accept the random ones, it's a get in the kitchen, make me a sandwich, here's a picture of my dick. Can I see your boobs? Do you really have boobs? Are you really a girl? That kind of stuff. That hasn't happened to me at all with Destiny. I've played with like 6 other people that I've joined parties with, random, to run through and do some strikes. And the experience has been really great. I've played Crucible, which is basically your 6-on-6, your PvP, traditional modes. You have Deathmatch. You have All or Nothing, which is basically 6 players and you're out for yourself, so whoever gets the most kills wins. You have Control, which is my favorite Crucible X game, I should say, and it's basically capture the flag. There are 3 bases, points A, B, and C, and it's 6-on-6 play, and your goal is to control and capture as many of the bases and hold control as long as you can while also killing other members. You do get points for killing people, and you get points for capturing or recapturing bases. And the teams are Alpha and Bravo, and at the end of 10 minutes of play, whoever has the most points wins the match, and you can get rare items and uncommon items to beef up your player. Those can be anything from helmet gear to weapons of different kinds, both your primary and secondary weapons, as well as your heavy weapons, which are really cool. The Crucible is really important as far as building up your XP in the game. I found that if you really want to quickly level up, especially between like 8 and I'd say probably 15, your best bet is to grind for a couple of hours in the Crucible playing Control, because even if your team doesn't win, you do get experience points every round that you go through. The better and higher your kills are, the more XP that you get, obviously. But I do find that outside of like story missions, Crucible is the best way to build up your character. So the story of Destiny is kind of interesting. It's not anything earth-shattering. Okay, there's a darkness in the universe, a la Mass Effect, that has pushed humanity and other races to the brink of extinction. the last bastion is this tower on Earth, and guardians, who are exemplary warriors of different classes, Titan, Warlock, and Hunter, go out into to the universe, exploring different planets and wiping out infected, wiping out Vex,
the Fallen.
I fucking hate the Vex, by the way. And some other baddies who suck out loud, in order to help the Traveler. And we're not exactly sure who the Traveler is, but they are the keeper of some great wisdom and tech that we need in order to completely banish the darkness from the universe.
We're the Traveler.
I don't know. We might be the Traveler.
We're the Traveler.
I don't know. So, as you play through the story, you unlock additional planets that you can go to. Right now, I have Venus and Mars open on my map, as well as the Moon. And then I also have the Crucible as a side mission that I can run and do. There are also additional side missions that you can run and do. Once you get to a certain point, there are heroic missions, which are basically ridiculously hard missions. If you're able to complete them, however, you will get a lot of rare item drops, legendary weapons, those kinds of things. The soft level cap in the game is 20. And then once you get to 20, you basically align yourself with a guild, is the easiest way to describe it. And there are different ones, those who lean more towards the side of light and righteousness, and then some that are more on the dark path, so to speak. Once you pick one of those guilds to run with, then all of the braggadocio type things that you earn, wins in the Crucible, mm-hmm. Vanguard marks for completing missions and things like that, are attributed to that guild, and you're able to unlock that guild's custom emblems as well as weapons and gear. I've chosen New Monarchy, mostly because, and it's a real girly thing, I like that they tend to err a little bit more on the side of light than dark, than the Clash, or I forget what the other one is right now. But also I like white and red, and all their gear is white and red, and does some hellfire damage, which is kind of cool. So there's so many moving parts and pieces to Destiny that I feel like anybody that's like, meh, isn't really exploring it. If you critical path it, you can run through it pretty quickly, but you'll miss a lot of the scavenger things. You'll miss a lot of the cooperative play that's in the game that I think really adds a lot of value to it and ultimately makes it fun to play. It's playing with other people. Strike missions, you're forced to play as a fire team full of three people. So if you don't have two friends on your list that you've already fire teamed up with, they plop you into one. And they specifically search to balance out your team. So it's not always all hunters. You will always be paired with another Warlock or Titan if you're a hunter, or the other two classes
and
that you're not.
I actually feel like the classes that they have, you primarily want to have one of each. Someone that I play with is playing a Titan, and eerily enough, some of the first levels, first missions that you do on Earth, he was actually struggling with, like fighting the wizard, because the wizard moves so fast, and, you know, the Titan is really just, you know, trying to take damage, so he had a hard time getting the wizard to even come close enough.
I hate Titans. That stomp move that they have just sucks, because it kills me
and,
in one hit.
It seems like each class has something special about them, because, I mean, like, I play a Warlock, and I'm an Awoken Warlock. Funny
and there's
story.
A mission that you go to actually meet the Awoken Queen, and she's kind of badass.
Kind of?
No, she's badass.
Okay.
Her brother's a douche,
but she's a badass.
Yeah.
Okay.
At least up to the point that I've played.
Funny story. My character and Ninja's character have the exact same hair, but parted completely different.
All right, so here's the deal. We did not talk to each other about designing our characters.
She was playing hers before I even started up
my
game.
We did not even see each other's characters until the first time that we played. And I shit you not, guys, when we got to the tower, I looked at Panda's character and I was like, you have my hair.
Except mine is blue.
Yep. And
parted the other way.
Yours is parted on the other side.
Which is weird because you can't change what the hair looks like.
Nope. It's so funny. Once you pick any of your characteristics, you can't go back and change them once they're done. But you do have 3 save slots in the game. So, you know, they want you to play as each class so you get exposure to all of them and understand them all. And one thing that I really like is that your gear, as far as your guns, your weapons, and any materials that you collect and you have either on your person or in your vault are interchangeable between your characters. So if you start off as, like I did, a hunter, and you get to level, let's say, 16, and you decide, okay, before I go any further in the game, I'm actually going to build up another character, maybe a warlock, any of the things that you put into the vault
Can be accessed
by that second character.
Nice.
So, you know, that's one of the reasons why you definitely want to make sure that you're very picky and choosy about the weapons that you dismantle for their gears and parts versus the ones that you put into the vault, especially if you're going to play through a second character and that second character is going to be a different class. As far as, like, gear on your person, obviously, if you don't pick gear that another character can use, so if you don't build a second hunter or a second warlock, the wearable gear isn't transferable, but the weapons and the materials that you gather are. So I started stocking up some of my rare and uncommon items that are of lower levels than I'm currently running with into my vault, which can hold weapons as well as gear as well as up to 100 other miscellaneous items, so strange coins, other materials that other bosses drop on various planets depending upon you taking them out, which is really cool that you can then use them in between characters. I like that, so I don't have to necessarily start from scratch zero if I start another character, which is really nice. There are some rare items that you can find that are pretty powerful that can be used starting from level 1, which would allow you to really smoke some ass starting a second character, and I like that. Although most of them start at, you know, a pretty decent rank. I think the lowest that I have now is 2 weapons that have, like, 60 damage that can be used by a level 1 character, and everything else has to be used by a level 6 character or above, which is cool. There's a big assortment of guns from sniper rifles to automatic rifles, shotguns, hand cannon, which is basically your ridiculous magnum up to, like, another notch. Your heavy weapons include rocket launchers and machine guns. You have ships that you can pilot from planet to planet, and there are even some that you'll earn as a bonus for completing certain missions or downing certain bosses. The strike playlist is amazing. It basically puts together 4 big bosses, 3 of which you know, and then 1 that comes out of no place that's just stupid, and I hate him, but whatever. But those are great missions to run through, again, to earn Vanguard marks and really beef up your character. And again, those are forced fire teams of at least 3, unless you're playing with some douchebag who, right when you get up to the last boss, decides they don't want to play anymore, doesn't tell anybody, and just leaves. So it's just you and another dude, and you're just like, hey man, we're just gonna keep dying, we should probably leave now. Damn, that sucks. But what's nice about that run is any of the gear and any of the points that you collect up until that point where you leave a strike mission go with you.
Oh, that's nice.
So if you don't complete the last boss and you have to leave for whatever reason, you don't lose that XP. You don't lose any of the weapons that you picked up or things like that. And you don't lose any of the progress that you've made leveling up your class of player, which I really respect because that would be one of the things that really pissed me off. Like, if I did all this grinding and my internet crapped out for whatever reason and knocked me out, I'd be pissed as shit if I lost all the rare items that I picked up because of that. But you don't. So I think that Destiny really does a great job of being a different game every time you play it, even though the levels themselves are the same. You have, you know, 5 to 6 big missions. You have a patrol, which is basically open area. Just go ahead and farm for every planet that you go to. Then you have the Crucible, which is deathmatch or PvP. Like, the structure is not very different than any other FPS game that I've ever played, but how it's put together and the quality of how it's put together, and then the random special events that happen on levels that allow you to team up with other players to take out overpowered bosses and, again, get some rare items, get some power-ups, get some crazy XP, but they're all a little bit different, and when they pop up is kind of random. Then you add in the timed special events that Bungie throws in that come a lot of times on the weekend, where there'll be special strikes that will open up that'll only be available Friday through Sunday. There's a character named Xur that only shows up on Friday and Saturday and is gone on Sunday, and you can trade in strange coins, quote unquote, that you find for superpowered gear from him. It's just a little bit different, and there are so many things that pop in and pop out that the game is just not tedious, other than it's a big grindhouse. And I really am enjoying it, and I can't say that I've enjoyed other FPSs like it as much, in all honesty. Like, I'm having a bomb-ass time playing Destiny, both with friends as well as new players that I'm bouncing into in games. I'm getting my ass handed to me repeatedly in the Crucible, but that's okay. I'll take that spanking and like it and ask for some more because I'm really enjoying it. So big, big ups to the Bungie team and to Activision because it's a really solid game and I'm having a blast. And that's really like the biggest piece of any game is like, is it fun to play? Destiny for me is absolutely fun to play. Like, I'm setting up play dates with friends 3 days in advance because, you know, we got work and jobs of like when we'll be able to be back on and team up and what we're going to do and run through and where we're going to do practice runs and all that kind of stuff. And I'm having a blast. So, fucking enjoying it. I don't know about you, Panda, but I'm fucking enjoying it.
No, I mean, like I said, I'm only level 8 now. And I mean, I just got to the moon.
I think you just went to the moon?
Like, I'm now doing moon missions.
Okay.
So, like, I'm not nearly as far ahead as you are.
I can come help you with your moon missions, because some of them really suck. And you don't want to do them by yourself.
Oh, I know. I mean, I've had pretty good experiences so far in Destiny. A lot of the people that I'm playing with, my friends who are usually really hardcore, are taking their time. A lot of them seem to be a little iffy about the story. Like, it's kind of generic, at least from where we are. It doesn't seem to really give you much more than, oh, you were dead, but now you're not dead, and now you're fighting all this stuff, and we're trying to figure out all this other stuff, and eventually you're the chosen hot dog, and you are going to, or not, you know, save everyone.
You do meet that chick, by the way.
Oh, the one that, like, shows up on the, like, mountaintop and then, like, disappears?
Yep.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, she's EXO and she's kind of badass.
Cool.
And it is a she, by the way.
It looked like a she. That's why I was like, have we met her yet? And you're like, nope. So I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, you meet her and then you go to Venus.
Okay. So,
and Venus is fucked up.
So, I mean, like, I'm looking forward to seeing the progression of stuff and hopefully getting tidbits of story. But I'm not nearly as far, so I can't really comment to a lot of stuff. I probably will not take a step into the Crucible at all.
Why?
PvP is not my style. I am not about shooting people I know in the face like that. And it's weird because
But you got a crucible in order to get, like, the good gear.
Nope. Not gonna do it.
But you gotta.
PvP is not my style.
It's not my style either. I hated PvP
in World of Warcraft, and I know I'm gonna hate PvP here.
No, I think you actually wouldn't like control.
So,
I think you like the capture the flag one. Maybe. You won't like the deathmatch.
Maybe. Because
it's
know.
Just everybody else for you.
I'm not trying to get my crucible.
I did experience.
I read the crucible in high school. I did my time.
I did experience some kill the girl on the map in deathmatch.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
But it was only one match, so, and I've played like 15. So, one out of 15 is so much better than previous experiences in Halo.
So, I'm definitely glad that you are enjoying yourself, and I'm glad that I've been holding up my end of the bargain, and
Less douchey in 2014
I did say that. On my neck of the woods, because, I mean, like I said, I don't have that much to say about Destiny because I'm not nearly as far as you are.
Yeah, you gotta play some more.
Earlier this weekend, I went and ventured into Cambridge, Massachusetts for the...
For Hipster Weekend 2014?
No, I went for the Boston Festival of Indie Games.
Beefing!
I went to Beefing. I was joined by our friend King Baby Duck from Boston Festival of Indie Games. We actually bumped into, or rather, he bumped into people that he knew, and I made some new friends over from Wicked Anime.
Oh, Wicked Anime! What up?
They are gentlemen and scholars. They are hilarious. They're twins.
And twinge!
And, like, they both actually work in the industry, which is pretty neat. So it's really funny listening to them banter back and forth about games, because, I mean, like my boyfriend works in the industry, too. And I don't talk to him about what he does because he could lose his job.
Yeah, he can't talk to you about what he does.
Right.
It's like working for the DEA.
Right. You can't talk about
my day.
It's like it was a day. And that's all that he can say.
Hey, baby, how was your day? It was 8 hours, and I took a lunch.
And there was a break.
Ta-da!
But listening to these two guys talk about their experiences, one, because they went to school for different aspects of doing game stuff. Like, one went for design, and one went for... You know, like making, like coding and programming and stuff.
And twins.
And it's funny because one has like a little soul patch on his chinny chin chin.
How you can tell them apart?
Yeah, like literally. Well, because one of them only has the soul patch.
Did you call soul patch soul patch?
No.
Oh.
But one has a soul patch and the other one has a beard and a mustache. One looks like the evil twin. Like, if you think of the plot from Muppets Most Wanted, it's kind of like that. So, like, the one who's got, like, the little soul patch reminds me of, like, Kermit and, like, the other brother who's got, like, the mustache and the goatee who looks a little bit more evil. But they're absolutely hilarious.
No, see, that would have been... Dash and Patch right there.
They were so nice and very gentlemanly because I was like the only girl in the group. And one of the first things that we did when we got to the Boston Festival this year was...
go to Anna's Taqueria.
No.
Oh.
We did like a victory lap to see what the deal was because last year what they did is they had the digital showcase in one building.
Right.
And they had the tabletop in another building across the street in one of the MIT, like the teaching rooms.
Yep.
And that's also that place where the tabletop was also where the media room was.
Right.
They were very smart this year and put both showcases in the same building.
Yay!
So there wasn't a lot of hoofing.
Easy walkables!
Yes, which I appreciated. They, however, changed the schematics around a little bit because they put the tabletop on the first floor and they put the digital showcase up on the track. Which, when you first go up there, because press hours were at 9, and this is where my story gets a little bit sad.
Oh, no.
Because we arrived early, you know, for press hour, and we got our badges, no problem, and everything.
Badges? And you don't need no stinky badges.
And when we walked up to the digital showcase, a lot of people were still setting up at 9. So there was really no way for, like, press to really come in and, like, get hands-on because people were still setting up monitors.
Well, and they said that in the email. They were like, hey, just let you know, there's probably going to be a big chunk of people who are just going to get there at 9.
I feel horrible because, like, I'm sitting there, like, and I'm ready. I'm looking for the first person who's, like, set up, and, like, they're all setting up during press hour. So I'm like, it's not really a press hour if you're not, like, here and ready. Same with the tabletop. They were still getting, like, their setups all set up.
Because they were probably all crunching until, like, midnight, probably the, night before. Getting builds ready and double testing shit.
Probably.
And so they probably didn't, were like, we'll get there at 9:30. There's not going to be a lot of press, so don't worry.
They're probably not going to be interested in us anyway. And, like, a bunch of people were like, I guess you guys aren't ready. And, like, we left. So, I mean, it officially went off at 10. And literally at 10, there was a giant line outside of people trying to get their badges. So, like, because of the way that they laid it out, even though I feel like there was more people, you didn't feel overcrowded by people. Because, one... Because
last year in the digital showcase, it was hard to get around.
It was. But because they put the tabletops there, what they had done is literally they had, like, three in a row, like, in a column. Three in a column. And then they had, I think it was, like, maybe five in a row. In a column. And they had, each of them had like a little black drop wall. So like they were separated enough so like you didn't get bogged down by seeing other games being played. When you sat down to play a game, you really were in this own little box and you were playing that particular game. And they made it very spacious so you could get through and you wouldn't, I didn't bump into a single person.
See, and I think that that's like the big hallmark of...
Layout is important, especially for something like this.
A show like Growing Up. Because, you know, yeah, I remember B-Fig last year was really kind of catching their roots and figuring out, you know, how many people are going to come and
I mean,
who's
gonna
be interested.
I feel like they had the right people in place. Because, you know, they had like somebody who was ahead of the tabletop. They had someone who was ahead of the digital, you know, and then they had like operations manager. Like they had some really interesting people running all that. So once we figured out that they weren't really ready and 10 o'clock rolled around, KBD had gotten an interview with the B-Fig people to talk about what he thought the future of indie games were.
Mm.
I had sent an email to do the exact same thing, but I did not get an email back. So
well, fiddle faddle puzzle with us.
It's okay though, because I guess they had seen that I had like emailed and they just never got back to me. So like, oh, well we've got two chairs in the space, so you can just share the same interview time with Evan. You know, KBD. So, of course, I was like, are you sure? Because, like, I'm not trying to impose, you know, your other appointment might show up. And they're like, nah, don't worry about it. So I did get to do an interview.
Awesome!
Which was really good.
And what is the future of indie games, Panda?
Well, they asked several different questions. Like, what brought us here? What we thought was gonna happen in the scape? I mean, KBD made some really interesting points about how, you know, like with Oculus Rift, even though he doesn't feel VR is the future, it's definitely going to be something that's going to bring immersion to the next phase in gaming. And I pretty much just said that I thought that the future of indie games really was kind of in tabletop. And this is why I say this. Like I've mentioned before, for my resolution this year, I told myself I was going to expand my gaming horizon by playing at least 30 new tabletop games in the year. And if I managed to do more than 30, then I would push to 52. So essentially one game a week. As of today, I'm at 32. So I've made my base goal. So now I'm aiming for my stretch goal.
Right.
And it seems like a lot of people are really trying to broaden what a tabletop game is versus what people think they are. Like, cause some people still think, you know, Milton Bradley, they're thinking Sorry, they're thinking,
Because those are the mainstream games that everybody grows up on, and those are the ones that you see in Target or in Walmart.
Like,
or
we as console gamers are always looking for something innovative in our console games.
And I think that console gamers are the reasons why there's been kind of a new innovation in tabletop, and
I feel like a bunch of people, because I mean everyone who is making a game, because I mean I got to play a lot of games, tabletop games this year, a lot of them are, you know, gamers, like console gamers, and you know they were like, you know, I play this thing and I'm like, why can't this be on a table, why can't this be like this, why can't, and the honest answer is it's not that it can't, just no one's done it yet. So case in point, I played about 6 new tabletop games at B-Fig this year. And
so then doesn't that technically bring you to 38?
No.
But you played them.
I did, but the last one brought me to 32.
Oh, the last one brought you to 32. Gotcha.
So of the games that I played, because I'm going to talk about the ones that really kind of stick out for me. For one, we had a great interview, KBD and I, with the head of the tabletop area. His name was Glenn Givens. And he also had a game on the floor that people were just clamoring to sit down. Like, there were lines to get on his table to play this game. And this game is called Slash. Now, some people who listen to the show automatically know exactly what Slash is. But for those who don't, let me give you a crash course. So, hey, I'm Pandalicious, and I love anime. And back in the day, right at, I want to say, senior year to freshman year of college, I had kind of mentioned on this show that I was a big Gundam Wing fan.
So much so that,
you know, there might be...
You were going to marry Hiro Yui, as far as...
In my mind, I already did.
Yep. And what was the voice actor that did his...
I don't...
...thing? Because you used to, need a towel.
Oh, my God. I can't even remember his name now.
Began with a C, I think.
I think it was... I don't know. Mark? I think it might have been a Mark.
No, I think it was Mark.
That's how you know I've grown up, because I don't remember.
You can't remember.
I can't remember.
Dun, dun, dun.
But back in that time, because I was really big into writing, I mean, I write articles, and I like to write stories, and oh boy, did I write stories back then, and a lot of them had, you know, me in the universe, in a Gundam, falling in love and doing very naughty, naughty things to a hero. Maybe even killing always killing Relina.
Yep. Mark Hildreth.
I knew it was a Mark.
Yep, you were right.
See, I was right.
Yep.
Anyway, so Slash pretty much is Slash Romance Without Boundaries. And if you go and you blend apples to apples, Cards Against Humanity, Fiasco, and fan fiction... And any nerd character from any comic, movie, anime that you can think of. Put them on cards, and that's Slash. So this is how you play. Essentially what you do is you get dealt 7 white cards. They're all white, so no discrimination there. On the cards, you will find characters.
Okay.
And if you're not fully familiar with a certain character, there's a little bio to give you an idea of what this character is like.
Okay.
There are 2 ways you can play the game. You can play it very casual by pretty much whoever is the primary matchmaker will throw a card out and say, who is the ideal match for Sherlock Holmes? So they'll put that card down and everybody else will look in their hand of, you know, characters, will select one of dubious or non-dubious character, will place it face down and will put it in front of the matchmaker who will then shuffle them up. And then reread them, and then determine who was the ideal match. Then there's hardcore mode. And this is the mode that I loved doing the most. Because this requires the players to really think outside of the box. So, the matchmaker will take their card, once again I'm going to go with Sherlock Holmes, and will play it face up, and will say something to the effect of, what was the first date like with your character with Sherlock Holmes? And you'd have to tell a story. Like a quick synopsis of how, like, they first met or their first date. Or Glenn, who, like I said, did an interview with KBD and I, we'd asked him what his favorite story was from one of the rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And he had someone play Darth Vader and had asked everyone to tell them the story about how their character broke up with Darth Vader and lived. And, you know, and everyone's like, oh, well, this one just fought it out and managed to survive, you know, scathed but not hurt. And one girl literally had Princess Leia and played Princess Leia and described this horrible morning scene of after everything had been done, they were sitting at a table trying to drink tea and that dreadful looming of realization that they're related happens. And they both kind of look across this table and refuse to utter it and refuse to acknowledge that what happened the night before actually happened. And that's how Princess Leia survived. And, like, the girl did much more justice than I did. But as he was describing it, we were both dying
Are we going to play this game?
Well, I bought it. So I was like, yep, this is a game that I have to own. Because I don't own Cards Against Humanity, but now I own Slash.
But I own Cards Against Humanity.
I know you do.
I have the bigger, blacker box.
I know, and I have the little white box.
And now you have the little white box.
I have the white box. It's only $25. And the company that does it is Game by Playdate. And the great thing about this game, the thing that I'm so glad that one Glenn told us about, is that they would love for you to buy the game. Like, because, you know, money for them means that they'll have more resources to, I don't know, make more games.
Right, which is a good thing.
But on the off chance that, you know, you're going through a tough time and you really don't have the $25 to throw down on it, well, you can go to their site and it's all under common use and you can download the PDF and you can print out the cards yourself.
So it's just like Cards Against Humanity.
It's exactly like Cards Against Humanity.
You can print out your own cards, but you can pay $25 and have the nice printed ones sent to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. Nice.
They just got the approval to do an expansion pack called the Blank Deck, which will have some blank cards where you could, you know, write yourself or another character that you don't think is in your card game.
Right.
And there are also some other cards that the characters' names have blank in them. So, like, it's a really clever way to play it up. There's a lot of innovation going on this year in the tabletop, but Slash was
so, like, mark blank and you can just make up a mark.
Well, no, like blank Blanca or like famous people who have blank some like Mark LeBlanc from Friends or whatever his name was.
Matt
LeBlanc, like that type of stuff. Like blank is in their name somewhere.
All right, that's just random and weird.
It is, which I love. It is hilarious. It is a good time. It's a good way to get a story in if you don't think, you know, you have time to play, like, a four-hour game of Fiasco, which, I mean, it's a tough game. Like, it's a long game. But Slash really kind of captured my heart, and I want to write fan fiction about Slash. That's just how good it is.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, when a game inspires you to write
fan fiction about it. It's obviously on the right path.
That's definitely, you know, good time spent on the weekend for sure. I like the idea in Hardcore where, you know, you have people telling a story because it makes people use their imagination.
Yeah. Like, you can't just throw down a card. Like, you have to have something to back it up.
Like, I think the only thing that I ever have, like, any kind of, like, not fun when I play Cards Against Humanity are the people that are playing and you can just tell that they're not thinking about what they're playing. They're not trying to be creative or inventive. They're just like, I gotta put down a card or two cards. So I'm gonna put two cards that I think sound kind of nasty and everybody will laugh and that'll be fine.
Like, literally during our demo of the game, one person, I can't remember his name, but he played Donatello. And he's like, explain to me, because we know that Donatello is a big pizza lover. He's like, outside of their love for pizza, how did your character woo Donatello's, you know, cheesy, pepperoni-ish heart? And the funny thing was, as the stories were being told, and I was the last one to throw a card down, I did not win this one. But I really thought I had a good idea. But all the other characters that people played were green. Like, they were all physically green. Like, She-Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and I'm like, guys, that, what? Like, it was such a funny thing.
That's racist.
So when it got So when it got to me, like, I had no green people in my hand, but I had Helen Keller. And
you did not.
I totally played Helen Keller. And I threw her down, and I was like, the world that Helen Keller knows has no color, and she can't describe things, but what she does have is a sense of smell. So she can enjoy things on levels that we, as mere humans who rely on all of our senses,
can't. And that's what Donatello loves most about her.
He loves the fact that she enjoys pizza in a way that he only dreams about. He masturbates
about. But it was supposed to not be about pizza.
I know, but it's her senses. It's the world that she has to live in that, you know, and like, everyone's like, whoa, man. Like, that got really...
That got real deep.
That got really deep. And I'm like, and she's green with envy because everyone else can see and talk about pizza, and she can't. Like, I tried very hard to keep the green alive, and it didn't work. But, like, She-Hulk totally won because it was just amazing. The story was great. That girl had it going on. But, It's really a good game, so if you ever have the chance, I suggest that you play it. Another game that I play, and this is the only other tabletop game I'll talk about, because I haven't written the article for EGM now yet, so I might as well do it here. It was one of the first games I played on the tabletop floor, and it's on Kickstarter right now. It was put there on the 5th of September. I think it's going to be there throughout October. They're about 30% through being backed, so if you like what I tell you about this game, then I totally suggest that you, you know, jump on board. And it's called Moriarty's Machinations.
Ooh.
And if you've ever played Scotland Yard, Bang, or there's another one. I guess it's called Mr. Jack. Then you are going to love this game. So what essentially happens is you have a certain number of people. At least, you want to have at least 5 or 6 people. But it can go up to, I think, 10. I think you can have up to 10 people playing.
Okay.
And everyone gets dealt a card that tells them who they are. They don't show that card to anybody else. So there's Moriarty, there's Sherlock Holmes, there's Detective Lestrange, I think. There's, you know, Irene Adler. There are some bad guys, and there's, like, Jack the Ripper and stuff. And everyone at the beginning of the game has to close their eyes, and they have to have their hand up like they're going to give a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And generally what happens is there's a little audio recording that will walk you through this part, unless you have somebody who will narrate for you, which I suggest you do. And they'll say, you know, whoever is Sherlock Holmes, put your thumb up. So mind you, everyone's eyes are closed, so no one knows who is who. And then it's like, if you're Irene Adler, open your eyes and look at the glorious thumb of Sherlock Holmes. And Irene Adler plays both sides.
Okay.
So, like, certain people get information of who is who, like, certain people, not everybody.
Right.
So once the game starts, essentially what happens is it's like a cops and robbers deal where everyone goes around the table, like, one at a time, and they will suggest a heist and a crew. A crew can be has to be at least 2 people, but can be more than that. And you have to announce who you want to go on this mission or this heist, and you have to tell what the heist is. And you have to kind of try to deduce if you're a cop, if you happen to be with a robber, or if you're a robber and you think you're with a cop. Because if you're a robber, you want the heist to succeed.
Right.
But if you're with a cop, because cops can foil any heist, it only takes 1 foil to do that. So you want to try to get, if you're a robber, you want to get the heist approved for a heist, and then you want to make sure that they actually, you know, succeed. And that's the point portion of the game, which points are great, but heists don't often happen because, you know, depending on your luck, there's a good chance that you're never with
another robber.
With another robber and or another cop. So at that point, there's an interrogation round where Essentially, I think it's Jack the Ripper and Detective Lestrange have to figure out through the heist process, because depending on if heists happen, if something gets foiled, it does reveal to the table that, oh, in that pairing, in that crew, there was a cop and a robber. Even though you don't see who drops what card, mm-hmm. you kind of have to figure out through how people are voting and how people are participating who is what. You know, at least on that spot, you might not be able to deduce who Moriarty is, but you know, oh, that last heist had like 3 abets and 1 cop. So you know that at least 3 of the 4 people who went on that heist are bad people,
mm-hmm.
you know, and stuff like that. So when the interrogation round happens, everyone talks, everybody talks, and you don't reveal who you are. The whole point of the game is that Lestrange is trying to capture Moriarty. And Jack the Ripper and Moriarty are trying to discover who Holmes is so that they can kill him. Irene Adler, who, like I said, plays kind of both sides of this game, secretly wants Moriarty to be revealed, but wants to keep Sherlock hidden. So that character is always trying to, you know, confuse everyone into who's who. So in my game, I actually was Sherlock Holmes. And I was actually...
Did you die?
No, I didn't. I actually survived. And it was the funniest thing because this one girl, like, she was like, you are way too confident. I'm like, am I Moriarty confident, though? Or am I something else? You know, and, like, you really kind of get into the zone a little bit. And at the end of it, because she was Jack the Ripper, so she was trying to figure out who Holmes was, because if she could announce who Sherlock was... Essentially, Jack kills her, and then the robbers win the game.
Right.
So that's kind of the deal. So there was another guy, and I don't mean to sound racist or anything like that, but there was another colored fellow at the table. So
there was another color.
Yay! Secondly, he had made a heist with like 4 people in it, and there was only 1 cop. And I could tell because I already knew, because as Sherlock, I could see who Lestrange was. And it was Lestrange that got put on there, so I knew he had foiled the heist. So I knew of the three who had, you know, abetted the for the crime, I knew one of them had to be Moriarty. I just didn't know which one. And so when it came time for people to point fingers, like, I was kind of looking at Lestrange, who was across from me, and I'm kind of, like, pointing my eyes. Like, I'm trying to be like, he's over there. Someone over there is Moriarty. So when the interrogation part happens, the girl who's Jack the Ripper, who was sitting next to me, points to the girl next to her, and she's like, you're Sherlock Holmes. And Lestrange points to the dark gentleman. He's like, and you're Moriarty. And of course, so the black guy's like, damn it. So of course he flips his card and he is in fact Moriarty. And I was all like, oh yeah. And of course, as I say that, the girl who is pointing her finger at a totally different person is like, no. And of course, the girl that she pointed out was not Sherlock Holmes. And then I turned mine and I'm like, you were so close. You could have smelled it. It was so good. It was amazingly good. I liked it. And for participating, we all got to take a fake diamond because they had these diamonds on this table. And, like, it was all blingy. And it was wonderful.
You got some bling bling for your fang fang?
I got a piece of bling that actually I thought was on my desk, but apparently it's not. But it's super huge, and it was fun. Like I said, it's currently on Kickstarter right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the rewards are pretty enticing. I mean, I really just
want... The name of the game one more time for anybody that wants to find
Moriarty,
it.
Is Moriarty's Machinations. It's still kind of an alpha. Like, there's still some things that they want to try to incorporate in the game. But this alone was really good. Like, I can imagine people who have, like, are going to have themed game nights... Like, that will have, like, murder
this
mysteries.
This is definitely sounding like a great party game. It's like Slash.
Just like Slash. And it was one of the games that I was like, yep, I want.
So did you find it on Kickstarter and have you backed it yet?
Yes, I did. Like, literally this morning, I was like, and there goes my money.
And there it goes.
And now I have to wait for my next check. And that's kind of how that
Yay,
goes.
Yay, checks.
I'm on the digital side because I did jump into some digital
Tell
stuff.
Tell me that you at least saw Gemini.
I did play Gemini. It was more of an experience than an actual game at this phase. But it was really nice and calming, especially because right before I had played that, I had played Albino Lullaby, which was kind of freaky. Because literally, it's like a first-person horror adventure, and you're in this house, and you're being held captive by these really weird-looking... They kind of look like fingers, but they're like demonic fingers. And one, I swear, looks like Hades from Hercules, but in flesh-colored. So Ew. It's really kind of creepy. So then I moved to Gemini, which, like I said, was far more relaxing and calm, which was nice.
Well, after this, what you just described, would be more relaxing.
I also spent some time with KBD, and he told me about a game that I wish I had played called Alien Makeout Simulator, where it's an Oculus Rift game where you literally are making out with aliens. Like, you have to figure out how to make out with aliens.
What?
And, like, yeah. So, like, you're looking at an alien and you have to, like, make all the... And you have
no,
to, like...
No, you don't.
Yes, you do.
No, you don't.
Yes, you do.
No.
And it was pretty intense watching, like, people, like, fake honky boobies. And, like... And, I mean, I'm assuming they were boobies. They might have been something else.
They may have been. I mean, you're dealing with aliens.
I mean, I didn't see it.
Might not be space boob.
But the game that really kind of struck me that I wrote about, and I'll talk about this one briefly, was Rain World.
Okay.
A friend of mine actually is involved in Rain World, and I didn't know that until I saw him standing at the booth.
Till you saw him.
So we know that I've gone to some chiptune shows, and I've talked about this band Bright Primate a couple of times.
Yes, you have.
Because they're pretty amazing on stage.
And KBD talks about them all the time.
And the lead chiptune artist, James Primate, is the sound design guy for Rain World. And he's working with another guy who currently, right now, I think he said is in, like, Hong Kong or maybe Shanghai. He's, like, away
he's
right now.
He's over there.
He's on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
But anyway,
this game was on Kickstarter, and people didn't really think it was going to happen. And actually, it's been funded double over. They were asking for, like, $25,000, and they have, like, $63,000. And the game pretty much consists of these really cute slug cats. So, like, they have, like, the tops of, like, cats with, like, pointy ears and, like, hands. And then, like, they have no feet, so they're, like, slugs. And they live in this world that they are trying to survive in. And they eat bats, and they can throw rocks and sticks. And they're these giant lizards that are just hungry for them. And at the bottom of the screen is a bar. And the bar begins to shrink because at the end of it, right before it ends, the slug cats have to find shelter because this heavy rain will fall down on them and it will shatter their bones. So it's survival for a certain amount of time, and then, you know,
this sounds really fucked up, actually.
Like, it actually kind of is. And and
damaging rain is fucked up.
Yeah, and like each level is set up differently. So like think like Bubble Bobble with like setup of like the level.
Yeah.
So, like, you're constantly moving around. We played with four different people because Wicked Anime, the Wicked Anime guys, played with KBD and I.
Yeah.
And we were in a competitive game where you want to try to get the other slug cats eaten by the lizards while you yourself staying alive and making it through surviving the rain. And, like, the first few levels where you're trying to get used to how your slug cat moves, you know, everyone was just kind of, like, trying to avoid each other, wasn't really trying to, you know, fight. And then all of a sudden, that competitive streak just kind of happened. The claws came out.
It doesn't kind of happen with you.
And I totally, like, I bludgeoned a dude with a rock, and then the lizard came, and literally, and then one of them, I threw a stick, and it bounced off of him, and it bounced him into the mouth of a lizard. And I was like, dude, I'm sorry. Like, I'm not sorry. I thought I was just going to impale you. I was hoping your death would be quick, but that's not what happened.
And now you're lizard munch.
And now you are food. There was no sound for the game because James is currently, he's got like several ideas, but he hasn't placed them onto the game yet. But when you've got Bright Primate on top of it, I know that the musicscape is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
It's definitely a game that, you know, four friends on a couch would probably end up punching each other in the face by the end of it.
It's like mini brawl, but not brawl.
Kind of, sort of. The animation is super cute. They were showing plushies of the slug cats and the lizards. And actually, Adult Swim bought the rights to it.
Oh, so it's going to be an Adult Swim game.
Yep, and they're going to manufacture the plushies.
Oh, that's the lizard awesome.
And the slug cat.
That's awesome. So, you know, Adult Swim's been picking up, like, a bunch of fucking games.
Yeah.
They picked up Super Combo Man by our homeboys over at Mugen Studios, too.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
So, like, but it was really fun. Like, we really got into it. It, you know, and if you're really more curious about what the game has in store, you can find it on Steam, Greenlight. Very much like Erica Reed got its
first... You mean Steam?
Yeah, Steam Greenlight.
Yeah, you said Stream.
Oh, Steam.
I was like, what the hell is Steam Greenlight?
Steam Greenlight. And it is truly interesting and fun and will really keep you on your, I don't want to say toes, because as a slug cat, you don't have toes. But it will keep you going until you can't go anymore.
Until the bone-crunching rain.
Until the bone-crunching rain ultimately ends your life.
Yeah. Until that moment, though.
Yeah, but until then, you're totally good.
Yeah, you're totally good.
You're totally good.
Yeah, so I wish that I had been able to go. I actually got sick, so I wasn't able to go to BFIG this year, because there were a couple of panels that I really wanted to attend.
Right.
They had a couple about getting into video game journalism, and another panel about really what it's like to be an independent game developer, and I was really looking forward to going to those, so I'm disappointed that I wasn't able to go. But one thing I will say, and I thought it was an interesting question that the BFIG people asked you when they were interviewing, is like, you know, what do you see the future of indie games being? And I think that tabletop is definitely one place where independent game development can flourish for sure, but I really think that it's in mobile. When you look at, you know, the rise of indie games really over the last couple of years, it's been digital and it's been on the mobile, and it's been because of things like the Android and the iOS development, you know, that it's really all open source. It's easily accessible, you know, affordably accessible, where, you know, dev kits for consoles, there's so much rigmarole that you have to go through in order to get a hold of it. Whereas if you want to make an iOS game or you want to make an Android game, the dev kits are available. You can download them from GitHub or you can get them from Apple Developer and you can grab that for free. And then if you want the tutorials on how to really do shit, you got to pay $100. And then you can easily get those things into the stores for sale where, you know, you're doing a shared profit where the store gets one piece of sales, but you get the rest of it. I think that that's really been kind of the spur of indie games when you think about, you know, so many things popping up in on Kickstarter and things like that. Yes, a big chunk of them are definitely tabletop, you know, things like Cards Against Humanity and Slash and probably more of the tabletop games that you're going to talk about on your EGM pieces are more than likely got a Kickstarter or Indiegogo vent to get them actually into production. But for those things that don't need a physical production, I think that mobile has been the thing that's really let indie go and become so much more than what it was.
I mean, I feel like when I talk about the, you know, future of game, like indie games coming from the tabletop, is not necessarily that I feel like that's the only place that we're gonna see a rise. I'm taken aback because I'm seeing how people are taking concepts from the digital gaming and want to apply it to a physical sense where we haven't normally seen that happen. Or at least not, we've never seen it done well. People are really taking the time to really try to translate certain things from a digital context to a physical in-your-face plane, which I find, that's what I find the most interesting.
No, I'm not saying that it's not, that tabletop expansion and innovation isn't interesting. It is. All I'm saying is, as far as the explosion of indie gaming where the future is, I kind of see that being on mobile. You know, like, take for example, you know, Apple's announcement. The game that they showed off was by a company, a startup, Super Mega Evil Corp is the name of the company, okay? And these two guys were showing off their first game ever. First game that they've ever made, which is going to run on iOS, and they were showing it off on an iPhone 6, and it's the game's called Vainglory, V-A-I-N, Glory, and it looks absolutely phenomenal. And when you're looking at the screen, you think that you're looking at a game that was developed for the Wii U, or a game that was developed for a big honkin' system, because it's running at 60 frames a second, and they're pushing thousands upon thousands upon thousands of polygons on the screen, and it's not. It's the first game that they've ever made, and it's on iOS.
Oh, wow.
Like, okay. You know, that's where I'm saying the future of indie gaming, it's really mobile, because anybody who has any kind of knowledge of creating games at all, even if it's bare minimum coding, there are resources and libraries out there that are easily accessible to help you bring that vision that you have to life, that's really where I see, like, indie blowing up. When you think about, you know, Adult Swim, okay, think about the Adult Swim games that are available on iOS and Android stores, right?
Mm-hmm.
Adult Swim is a programming block on on Cartoon Network, right?
Yes.
It's not its own channel. It's not its own venue. It was a programming block of really adult cartoons.
Yes.
And now their biggest chunk of money that they make come from these bunch of what in essence are mini games that have been turned into individual games that you can buy for $1.99 and have in-app purchases. Like, I played Amateur Surgeon 1 and 2, like crazy whenever I traveled. And, you know, in all honesty, that's an independent game release. When you look at, you know, the biggest sellers on mobile stores, both the Android marketplace as well as the iOS store, games are what people try, buy, and all that kind of stuff at a 10 times higher rate than productivity apps. So for me, I see the future of indie games being mobile because that's what's really flourished it the last 2 years. That plus Super Meat Boy is also coming to iOS. So I can't wait to play that on the iOS. I mean, it's great on the console, but I feel like that was like a game that was supposed to be on mobile, and it was on console.
Well, now it's coming. Computer.
And so it's coming. And so, you know, there's all kinds of cool stuff coming. If you haven't had a chance to check out Vainglory yet, definitely do it. I think when that game comes out, it's going to be really super cool. And I think that there are going to be a lot of people that enjoy it. Because basically, it's a MOBA game, guys. It's a multiple online player battle arena game on your iOS, running at 60 frames a second.
Right.
Like,
wow.
That's crazy.
Wow.
That's crazy. It's crazy. So, lots of game stuff this week, guys. Such a good week to be a gamer. Great week to be a nerd. Loving it. So, share your opinions with us. Panda's got a bunch of other stuff that she's going to talk about from BFIG. You'll be able to find it on our website, www.egmnow.com/electricsisterhood. Subscribe. So that way, the moment we put out new articles there, you can get a hold of them, check them out, share your thoughts, put them up on your social, let us know what you think about them, because we love your opinions. Just like we hope you love ours. You can always find our podcast at our website, www.electricsisterhood.com. You will also find the podcast in your iTunes by searching for Electric Sisterhood and subscribing. You'll find us in the Microsoft Marketplace by doing the same. You'll find us on Stitcher Radio, and you can subscribe there too, because again, we're all up in your interwebs. You will also find our show on the VOG Network on Tuesdays right before Anime Jam Session, so you can really ducktail your nerdiness into a fantastic couple hour block there. You know, because Tuesdays are meant for awesomeness, and we're right there on VogNetwork.com. You can pretty much put us into any podcast search engine or just hit up the web and be like, where can I find Electric Sisterhood? And you'll find us. So make sure that whatever way you want to get us in your ear holes, that you find a place and subscribe. So you can make that happen every week. You can also hit us up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/landofesh, and share any thoughts that you have with us. If there's something you want us to check out and review and do on a podcast, hit us up on our page and be like, hey, yo, sisters, I think y'all should check out blah, 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 blah. And we'll let you know if we can. And if we do, what podcast will be on? It's so awesome to be interactive. You can also check out some of the nerdy things that we're sharing and things that we have opinions on that are not necessarily podcastable or writable, but Facebookable. So we do that on our page, facebook.com/randomesh. You can also hit us up on our Twitter, because we tweets like a mofo. At ESH News, follow us. I guarantee your feed will be at least plus 10 more enjoyable. There, I said it. I put it out there.
Okay.
That's the number. I'm sticking to it. But we're not the only thing that makes up the Land of Esh. While our stuff typically goes out on Mondays, actually it's more like Tuesday morning, you can also check out KBD hosting No Borders, No Race on Tuesday. If it's indie, whether it's music, K-pop, theater, entertainment of any kind, movies, music, you name it, he's talking about it. So make sure that you check out No Borders, No Race over at b3crew.com. And on Wednesdays, if you need a little wiggle, a little bass in your face, then check out Geek Aggro, hosted by our homeboy, Deuces Wild, the best in trap, EDM. If it's going down, if it's a wiggle, if it's house, if it's it's on Geek Aggro. So make sure that you check out that show. And then on Thursdays, if you've got issues,
he's got issues,
y'all can have issues together. The Issues Guy Issues Program, call in live, be part of the YouTube stream, be part of the randomness. Because it is random, but it is a hell of a lot of fun. And for the rest of your Nerd Week, like I said, we're on the Twitters, we're on the Facebook. Interact with us like a mofo. Because you're a mofo. We're mofos. We're mofos together. So with that, I'm going to turn to my sister and say, hey, Sneezy.
Hey.
What should you dig in this week?
I am digging Anna's Taqueria.
Oh,
best lunch
period.
So jealous.
I know. I thought about trying to bring back a burrito, but I was like, nope, I'd eat it.
No.
It'd be all soggy in my bag.
There's no bringing back burritos from Anna's Taqueria unless you're leaving the taqueria right then to bring the burrito.
Which I wasn't going to do.
No.
So what shit are you digging this week?
I gotta be honest with you, I'm digging multiplayer games.
Okay.
I've had a really great experience with Destiny, and it's kind of revitalized my love of playing games with people that I don't know.
Nice.
So
that's
so nice. I have warm and fuzzies. Instead of, damn you, internet! So as always, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next week, guys.
See you later.
Deuces.